This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2021, held at Faith Builders from August 2 through 6.
Educating for the Kingdom, critical thinking. So in review, educating for the Kingdom requires getting at the heart of a matter and taking action. But getting at the heart of something and knowing what action to take both require thinking, which is hard work, and probably why so few engage in it. Perhaps one of the greatest gifts we can give our students is to teach them to think. Learning isn't just learning, it's learning how to learn. Let's start with a story. Three impossible gifts. Long ago in China, things were different. When you got married, you joined the husband's household, and the father-in-law was head of the home. So two sisters got married, moved about a day's journey away, and things went fine for a while, but it wasn't always so easy to live with their father-in-law. And one time they asked for permission to go back home and visit their father and mother, and he granted them permission, and they enjoyed it so much they kept asking, and he got tired of all these trips. So finally, one time he said, when they asked to go for a visit, that they would not be allowed to leave unless they could find three things he wanted them to find. So they were required to find fire in paper, water in paper, and air in paper. They both sat down beside the road and started to cry. They realized that he had asked them to find three impossible things. But it wasn't so long until a girl came by on a water buffalo and asked the sisters why they were so upset. When she heard their problem, she laughed and helped them find exactly what they needed. When the sisters returned carrying the three gifts their father-in-law had requested, he was surprised and pleased. No one else had been able to bring him fire in paper, water in paper, and wind in paper, so he agreed to allow them to see their relatives as long as they wished. What did they bring back to him? Fire in paper, a Chinese lantern. Water in paper, a paper cup. And wind in paper, a paper fan. And their father-in-law was pleased. So, critical thinking, a definition. Actually, three definitions. Number one, the objective analysis and evaluation of an issue in order to form a just judgment. Number two, critical thinking is that mode of thinking about any subject, content, or problem in which the thinker improves the quality of his or her thinking by skillfully analyzing, assessing, and reconstructing it. And number three, critical thinking is self-corrective thinking. So, don't get hung up on all the big definitions here. Basically, critical thinking is thinking about thinking, thinking hard, and through the process, improving your thinking. A lot of the thoughts and thinking that we have every day are based on surface level or simple things. So, critical thinking refers to getting to a deeper level. Remember, we're not just teaching facts, we're teaching them to learn how to learn. A few requirements for critical thinking before we get on to our three main questions. Critical thinking requires practice, which requires hard work or grit, which, as any other skill does. I heard a young man playing piano just half an hour ago over in the lounge. I'm impressed with his skill, but I doubt he was born with that immediately. So practice, hard work. Same thing is required of thinking. You know, Marco Polo told many stories to the Europeans when he came back from China. Some were fantastic. One that wasn't made up, which they just couldn't believe, was that over there in China they burn rocks. And the Europeans laughed. You can't burn rocks. It's impossible. Everybody knows you can't burn rocks. And so, until they discovered coal in Europe and started burning rocks, the Industrial Revolution didn't happen. But eventually it did once they got over that assumption. So Number two, critical thinking requires abandoning assumptions. And one thing I should emphasize up front is it requires humility. I could be wrong. I talked about taking intellectual risks in an earlier session. To move forward, we have to be willing to take a risk and be humble. And when you start a discussion, I could be wrong. Maybe I don't have the right understanding right now. Humility. And it requires deep thinking. You know, we tend to focus on the immediate obvious, the surface structure things. We make assumptions and jump from this to that without deciding whether we should have. For instance, talking about going deeper and how we make assumptions on the surface, here's an experiment, a little story that some researchers did. A treasure hunter is going to explore a cave up a hill near a beach. He suspected there might be many paths inside the cave, and he was afraid he might get lost. Obviously, he did not have a map of the cave. All he had with him were some common items such as a flashlight and a bag. Suggestive. What could he do to make sure he could not get lost trying to get back out of the cave later? Any thoughts? Beach, bag. The solution is to put sand in the bag, leave a trail as you go so you can trace your path back when ready to leave the cave. About 75% of American college students thought of this solution, but only 25% of the Chinese solved it. The experimenter suggested the Americans solved it because they grew up hearing the story of Hansel and Gretel, who dropped breadcrumbs, leaving a trail. So the experimenters gave subjects another puzzle based on a common Chinese folktale, and the percentages reversed. So this shows that deep structure is what is under the surface story. For instance, two math problems, one about vegetables and one about rows of students, could possibly both be solved by finding the least common multiple. But the brain may not immediately think they're related. Vegetables and students are not related. So it's hard work, takes practice. We need to abandon our assumptions. Frankly, we just don't do enough of this. And critical thinking requires content. I will briefly refer to Sherlock Holmes. He's a good example of the broad, deep knowledge required in critical thinking. So before I go into Sherlock Holmes, let me say critical thinking isn't a class that you would teach in your school necessarily. Like, we need to make space in the subject, in the schedule, so that we can have a critical thinking class. Critical thinking is a skill or a practice you aim to develop in many different content areas, whether it's critically thinking about the stories you read, the history you read, the science, Bible, etc. So it requires content. It's not something you can do in a vacuum. So Sherlock Holmes is known for clearing his brain of unnecessary content and just focusing on what he needs to know. So one of the most famous exchanges is when he first encounters Dr. Watson and says, "You have been in Afghanistan, I perceive." Have any of you ever read about this encounter? Okay, several of you. So I don't have time to tell the whole story, but in summary, all Holmes was told was that Watson is a doctor. Everything else he deduced by drawing on his knowledge of, among other things, the military, geography, how injuries heal, current events, etc. So he then explained his thought process. And this is fictional, of course, but it still explains how thinking can work. Here's a gentleman of a medical type, heir of a military man, clearly an army doctor then. He has just come from the tropics, for his face is dark, and that's not the natural tint of his skin, for his wrists are fair. He has undergone hardship and sickness, and as his haggard face says clearly, his left arm has been injured. He holds it in a stiff manner. Where in the tropics could an English army doctor have seen so much hardship and get his arm wounded? Clearly in Afghanistan, which the British were currently in, as many other empires have entered as well. So I want to emphasize that it requires content. It's not something we do in a vacuum. So moving on, if we want to have thoughtful students graduating from our schools, and we must be critical thinkers. But what happens in the middle here? What should we do as teachers to help develop critical thinking? So again, we will follow our format. How did Jesus teach with critical thinking? How do others teach with critical thinking? And how can I teach with critical thinking? First of all, Jesus taught with logic. Consider the exchange found in Luke 13, 14 to 16. Jesus was continually attacked for supposed violations of the Sabbath. And in this passage, he presents an argument in his defense as follows. The ruler, I won't read the whole passage here. I will start with premise one. Loosening the cattle from their stall and taking them out to water on the Sabbath is widely practiced and accepted by the Pharisees. Premise two. This woman, a daughter of Abraham, far more valuable than cattle, has been bound by Satan for 18 years and has also been loosed on the Sabbath. Conclusion. Therefore, if it is acceptable to loosen the cattle on the Sabbath, then it should be even more acceptable to loosen a daughter of Abraham. Consider the words of Jesus in Luke 11, 23, where Jesus confronts the Pharisees with two disjunctive syllogisms in the same verse as follows. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth. So for the first part, premise one, either you're with me or you're against me. Premise two, they were obviously not with him since they were attacking him. Conclusion, therefore they were against him. And the second part of the verse, premise one, either you gather with me or you scattereth. They were obviously not gathering with him, therefore they were scattering. Or in John 8, 47, where he's arguing with the Pharisees, he that is of God heareth God's words, ye therefore hear them not, because you are not of God. So I may have lost some of you. And some of you elementary teachers may think this has nothing to do with you, but it does. And the good news is we're moving on here. But I want to give a practical example. Even if you're not going to follow the logic of Jesus and go through premise one to conclusion with your students, you can still ask them questions when you hear things that are a little questionable to help clear up their thinking. For example, did he really nail his eye to the wall in their writing and help clear up some things that you would otherwise just laugh about after school with other teachers? Jesus also taught with alternatives or offered alternatives to a dilemma. So the Pharisees were constantly trying to catch him in a trap. And in philosophy, this is known as a dilemma. There are two alternatives. These are the only options. And responding to either one gets you in trouble. Consider Matthew 22, 15 to 22. Again, I won't read the whole passage, but they took counsel that they might entangle him. And the question was, what thinkest thou? Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not? We got it. So if Jesus answered it was lawful, he's recognizing Caesar is higher than he is. If Jesus said no, then he's declaring himself an enemy of Caesar and he can be arrested. However, they didn't anticipate his alternative, his third option. Jesus said, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God's. And they marveled and left him and went their way. Jesus' intellectual brilliance was enough to leave anyone, even his most ardent opponents, speechless and in awe. Or another time, the story, they were going to trap him. Now, this man, many people had died. The woman was last to die, but all seven men had married her. So when people rise from the dead, whose wife will she be? This is also from Matthew 22. And Jesus answered, you don't know what you're talking about. It's going to be different in heaven. So he provided an alternative to just whose wife will she be? Questions. Jesus taught with a lot of questions. In fact, Jesus asked 288 questions in the Gospels. So I'll spend a little time here giving some ideas on questions. Be sure to use questions in your classes. First of all, Luke 9:18. Whom say the people that I am? Why did Jesus ask this question? Didn't he know? Likely it was a teaching moment for the disciples, a warm-up question, as it were, a get them talking question. Questions can feel not safe to you as a teacher, but I want to encourage you to ask them anyway. So Jesus could have said, I am the Christ, the Son of the living God. It would have been a lot safer that way. He was God, so he could have just told him how it was. But he asked the question, well, what if his disciples say, we're not quite sure. So as a teacher, you might feel like a little scared of discussion and asking questions because you don't quite know where it's going to go. But I want to encourage you to ask questions anyway. Jesus chose a question to craft this one of the most central things in all of the Bible. Who is God? Who is Christ? And Jesus chose to use the teaching method of a question. Why? A second point here about questions. Answers change lives. Over in Mark, I think we have the same question, Mark 8, and we have a follow-up question to whom do people say that I am? He went to from a more general question to a more personal question, who do you say that I am? Jesus taught that we are changed as much by what we say as by what we hear. So as you discuss with your fellow teachers here what you heard at Teachers Week, you're more likely to be changed and remember if you actually say it yourself. This is what I heard in the session. Then if you just sit here, hear it, and then go home and forget it. The confession of the mouth, Jesus said, what comes out of a man makes him clean. The Bible makes a big deal about if you confess with your mouth, Romans 10:9. You know, God needs to hear it. It's not that God needs to hear it. He might already know what you're thinking. It's not that others need to hear it. It's that you need to say it. Until you confess the truth when you confess the truth with your mouth, you're changed by that truth. So back to our students. Students learn it when they say it. That's the reason to ask the question. You can just tell them, or you can ask a question, get them to say it. It changes them. Another form of questions Jesus used was answering questions with questions. This was normal for him. Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus said, why do you call me good? Another time, how is it that your disciples do not fast? The Pharisees fast. And Jesus answered, how can the guests of the bridegroom mourn when he is with them? Another example, why this waste? This perfume could have been sold at a great price. Jesus said, why are you bothering this woman? The Pharisees, another question. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? What did Moses command you? He replied. And famously, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law? How do you read it? So questions can be disarming to students. You can use questions. If a student tries to trap you in a dilemma, you can ask a question to buy some time and figure out what to say next, and also to reveal what they're thinking. So, why do we have to learn this stuff? And suddenly you're on the defensive and you're not sure what, because I said so. Try responding with a question. Do you really want to know? Turn it back to them. What do you think? Why do we have to learn this? So, listening and hearing from them first makes it less argumentative, and then you can decide how to proceed. Jesus also asked rhetorical questions to make a point. Why does this generation seek a sign? Jesus asked correcting questions. Instead of saying to the Pharisees, you are so stupid, you never understand anything, which you might be tempted to say sometime, Jesus asked, do you not yet understand? Or you might say, what don't you understand? Instead of what you're thinking. So when disciplining, discipling, or mentoring, ask disarming questions and get the student to state what happened. You know, police officers and lawyers know when they're in the courtroom or questioning a subject, they need to get them to say it. Until it comes out of their mouth, it doesn't count in the courtroom. So get your students to say it. Jesus asked questions to seek feedback. For instance, when healing a man of blindness, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" We can ask a question, "Do you understand what we're studying? Do you understand what I'm saying?" And Jesus, and soul-searching questions, Jesus said, "What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet forfeit his soul?" So you can sometimes end with a good thinking question, an open-ended question that doesn't have a clear answer. An example for us might be, how can a church survive if it isn't in touch with the needs of the congregation? Closing with an open-ended thinking question can leave a strong impact. So how do others teach with critical thinking? So I mentioned earlier, we have all different levels in here. Some of you might be teaching at the lower level thinking, wow, this sounds pretty complicated, philosophy and all that. Well, you can use critical thinking in kindergarten. Here it's some examples from how Heidi did that from Maryland. So they were reading The Little Red Hen in kindergarten and discussed, is it fair that the little red hen did not share her bread? Yes, it was fair, said one student. None of the other friends did any work, so she shouldn't have to share. No, it wasn't fair, said another. She should share because it's the right thing to do. She wasn't being a good friend either. After reading Goldilocks and the Three Bears, I asked the children to decide which part of the story was most important. Many of them said it was when Goldilocks broke into the bear's house, because if she didn't break in, there would be no problem. Others argued for the part where the bears found Goldilocks in Baby Bear's bed, because that is when she was caught. The critical challenge for the three Billy Goats Gruff was to determine the most important item in the setting of the story. Was it the bridge, the river, or the grass? Students then had to pick one and defend or explain why they thought that was the most important. The grass was the most important, said one student. If there was no grass on the other side of the bridge, then the goats would not have anywhere else to go. The river was the most important, said another. The goats had to cross it to get to the grass. If the river wasn't there, then the goats could just walk to whatever grass they wanted, and there would be no troll. So, I can give you some examples of how to ask those open-ended questions that make students think. Another story, Mr. Whitson. Mr. Whitson taught sixth grade science. On the first day of class, he gave us a lecture about a creature called the cattywampus, an ill-adapted nocturnal animal that was wiped out during the Ice Age. He passed around a skull as he talked. We all took notes and later had a quiz. When he returned my paper, I was shocked. There was a big red X through each of my answers. I had failed. There had to be some mistake. I had written down exactly what Mr. Whitson said. Then I realized that everyone in the class had failed. What had happened? Very simple, Mr. Whitson explained. He had made up all the stuff about the cattywampus. There had never been any such animal. The information in our notes was therefore incorrect. Did we expect credit for incorrect answers? Needless to say, we were outraged. What kind of a test was this, and what kind of a teacher? We should have figured it out, Mr. Whitson said. After all, at every moment he was passing around the cattywampus skull, in truth a cat's. Hadn't he been telling us that no trace of the animal remained? He had described its amazing night vision, the color of its fur, and any number of other facts he couldn't have known. He had given the animal a ridiculous name, and we still hadn't been suspicious. The zeros on our papers would be recorded in this grade book, he said. Mr. Whitson said he hoped we would learn something from this experience. Teachers and textbooks are not infallible. In fact, no one is. He told us to not let our minds go to sleep. And to speak up if we ever thought he or the textbook was wrong. Every class was an adventure with Mr. Whitson. I can still remember some science periods almost from beginning to end. One day he told us that his Volkswagen was a living organism. It took us 2 full days to put together a refutation he would accept. And he didn't let us off the hook until we had proved not only that we knew what an organism was, that we had the fortitude to stand up for the truth. We carried our skepticism into all of our classes, which caused some problems for the other teachers who weren't used to being challenged. If ever I'm asked to propose a solution to the problems in our schools, it would be Mr. Whitson. I haven't made any great scientific discoveries, but Mr. Whitson's class gave me and my classmates something just as important: the courage to look people in the eye and tell them they are wrong. He also showed us you can have fun doing it. And not everyone sees the value in this. I once told an elementary school teacher about Mr. Whitson. The teacher was appalled. "He shouldn't have tricked you like that," he said. I looked that teacher in the eye and told him he was wrong. And Marva Collins' Way. This is a book, or there is a book that Marva Collins and a co-author wrote that I read many years ago, maybe 17, my first summer term, and I thought about this again. And so if you want to research it more, there's a book called The Marva Collins Way, and you could Google some about her. But Marva Collins graduated with a degree in secretarial science, but no one would hire her because she was black. So she took one of the few jobs available open to women in the 1950s American South, teaching. And then eventually she ended up in Chicago, and she became famous for teaching losers in the Chicago system who had failed the system in the basement. And then eventually, when she found a method that worked successfully for her, she took $5,000 out of her savings and started a prep school in her home. And she had children from ages 3 to 13 who she taught by herself at first. She emphasized phonics, reading aloud, thinking, discussing, and writing. And the most remarkable thing, she started with Emerson's Self-Reliance, and then by second and third grade, they were reading Shakespeare and reciting Canterbury Tales. So it's an amazing story of how she challenged students with great reading material at a young age, and it shows a little more is possible sometimes than what we think. So if you're interested in a challenge, read about Marva Collins. Some other things she did: every student wrote a report every 2 weeks about his latest book, presented it to the class, and answered questions raised by the other students, which sparked so much interest from the other students, they wanted to read that book as well. Some suggestions for you from Marva Collins' Way. One, she walked up and down the aisles. It was usual for teachers in her time to just stay behind the desk or the podium. But I encourage you, do that movement. Get out there to your students. Circle or cycle around their desks. Ask them questions. Correct their work. Number two, she used the Socratic method. She asked a lot of questions like, was the little hen, red hen, right? Or, did the witches make Macbeth do evil? So she asked thinking questions. Number three, she cared for each student. And number four, she used inspiring phrases like, if you can't make a mistake, you can't make anything. And another inspiring story, teach like your hair's on fire, which I referred to in the afternoon workshop for those of you that were in there. And I see it's for sale down in CLR. And he used a lot of critical thinking. Rafe Esquith used a lot of critical thinking in his classroom as well. How can I teach with critical thinking? First of all, ask questions. Tell stories. I don't have that. So asking questions and telling stories. I would like to tell a short story and give an example of how you could ask a question about it. Garrett Morgan, who invented the gas mask, was the son of a former slave, and no one would believe that his invention worked. Then there was a terrible fire in a tunnel 250 feet beneath Lake Erie, and even the firemen couldn't do anything. Morgan and his brother, using the masks he invented, went in and saved 32 people. The next thing you knew, police departments all over were sending in orders, and the gas masks used in World War I were based on his invention. Why wouldn't people trust his invention? Do any of you know? We'll relate it to previous knowledge. Why couldn't Marva Collins get a job as a secretary? He was black. No one would trust his invention. What did it take until they trusted it? Proof. Terrible tragedy. Anybody know what else he invented, incidentally, that you will drive under on the way home? The traffic light, after witnessing a horrible accident between a car and a horse-drawn carriage. So tell lots of stories and ask your students lots of questions. Compare and contrast. I won't say a lot about this because we looked at a Venn diagram yesterday. Learning about reptiles by comparing and contrasting frogs and toads, for instance. Another way, case studies. So these could work for different types of classes, but thinking about relationships, Jill and her school friends are talking after church. An interesting discussion develops regarding a girl who none of them like very well. She is just so weird and different, etc. Comments start flying. What should Jill do or say? And then maybe either a class discussion or break your students into small groups. Solve this problem for Jill. Or another case study, Tom's best friend moves 10 states away. He doesn't have any others. What should he do? Or you can come up with your own case studies for science, history, what should have happened. Role play. Perhaps you saw just a small example of this in the workshop with my wife and I. Two people could work together. For instance, in health class, two students could be assigned to learn about a disease. So in health class, you're learning about the following list of diseases. And one option lecture, remember, is very efficient. You could put all the diseases on a PowerPoint and rush through them, and then they would know them, right? Or you could assign them to work in pairs to research a disease. One is the doctor, one is the patient. And so then they would do this for the rest of the class after they do a little research, and they would act out, you know, sitting down and the patient coming in and saying, well, I have the following symptoms, and the doctor asking questions, and then the other students would learn about that disease. Or they could research and act out two different historical figures, maybe with opposing views to each other, have a conversation between Jefferson Davis and Abraham Lincoln. Research and writing. This is effective and undervalued or emphasized. I remember some of the reports I wrote in middle school. I remember I wrote one about the Spanish Armada, one about William Penn. They weren't very long, and I'm not saying they were very good, but I remember them. I remember more from what I had to do in school than just from what I was told. And don't forget biography. You could make up a form with questions for them to answer after they read a biography. Bible study skills. And different kinds of projects. Students, for example, could have to create a country from scratch, an imaginary country, so that they have to research what makes up a country. Or, of course, basic science projects or other projects with specific goals or questions driving them will teach critical thinking, where they have to think about it themselves. Public speaking, believe it or not, can make them think to prepare for this. You know, it's said that surveys show it's public speaking is close to a number one fear in the world. Some people even fear it more than death. So if you can start at a young age, even in an elementary classroom, having them practice telling stories to the class, have them talking to the class, the more you can have them presenting to the class when they get to the upper levels, they should graduate from school, being able to, being comfortable to talk to other people. And I have stories down here that I already talked about. Tell stories. So I will end with a question, and then maybe a short story and a blessing. Here's the question. How will you teach with critical thinking? If you go considering that question, then you will be practicing critical thinking. And just a short story. The Romans, it said, never conquered Ireland. They got Britain finally. They wrapped up the Scots up there and whipped them into shape. And the Roman Empire was very big, but they never conquered Ireland. Why not? They believed the world was flat. And their maps showed it. The cartographers had great sea monsters on the map. So somehow they could get across the English Channel. That wasn't too far, I guess. But on the other side, that big sea between Britain and Ireland, they were scared of that. You would fall off the edge of the world and there were sea monsters. The Romans, scared. They never conquered Ireland. So the lesson here is abandon your fears. I'm sure you have many fears going into the classroom this year, but have humility as well. Abandon your fears, but have humility. Our theme verse for our school this year is, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." I want to leave you with a blessing. I hope you have been inspired by Jesus and others' examples this week to better educate for the kingdom. Welcome to those of you that are new, and blessings to all of you as you enter your classroom soon. May His kingdom come and His will be done in your classroom as it is in heaven.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.